Right now, it's been a busy week in Wisconsin news.
Wisconsin Attorney General Brad Schimmel announced on Wednesday that state authorities would begin to look at some of the backlog of untested rape kits in the state's crime lab. That announcement comes as the State Department of Justice received criticism on how the state has handled that criminal evidence.
Robert Menser joins us now, as he does every Friday, to break down this and other top news from the past week. He's a storytelling editor with USA Today Network Wisconsin, based in Wausau. Rob, welcome back.
Hello, thanks.
Well, in the past year, Wisconsin got some federal grant money to start testing this backlog of rape kits. How is Wisconsin doing?
Yeah, they didn't do it. They took the, they got the money and they haven't done the testing. So it's a little more complicated than that. They're going to get started. But this came after, you know, this response only came after some more pressure from our investigative reporter at USA Today Network Wisconsin, Keegan Kyle, who first looked into this in 2014, found that there were more than 6,000 untested rape kits sitting in police storage. Wisconsin is not the only state that has this backlog, but there is evidence that suggests that Wisconsin is doing worse than many other states, has a larger backlog. So after this initial report came out, the Department of Justice announced $79 million in grants to test these kits. Wisconsin got $2 million specifically for testing, another $2 million for some investigations. That was a year ago. And what has happened since then is DOJ took months to develop a survey about untested evidence that they sent to police departments. And then many of the police agencies apparently are taking months to fill out and respond to that survey. So nothing really has started.
So the idea from the DOJ then has been that they wanted to survey everything before they began the testing. Is that still something they're trying to wait for before they start testing?
Well, so there are some actual issues or some questions here. Okay, so for example, there are times when rape kit testing is not necessarily required in order to get a conviction in the case. So in that case, they may not perform the tests, and they would keep the kits in case there were appeals in those criminal cases. There may also be departments that didn't respond because they don't have any kit, they have no backlog. So there are some, you know, reasons to find out what's going on. Another one, just to make sure we're sort of covering the waterfront here, another thing that may cause this is if a victim chooses not to go forward with charges, that kit may not be tested, though there are advocates who say that they should be tested in all cases in order to sort of build a database of people who are committing rapes. But that may be a reason. So, okay, so these are valid questions, or at least these are questions that ought to be answered. The Department of Justice has a right to try to find the answers to these. But the question really is, why is it over a year at this point? And I think that a lot of people, including Senator Tammy Baldwin, came out and was quite critical of this, and that this week prompted the State Attorney General Schimmel to say that they would sort of move this along, put this on the front burner, and show progress on this.
So once these kits get tested, now we're talking about the ones that should be tested, not the ones you were just talking about, the idea is then that the DNA gets tested against a database, right, to see if there's any sort of matches that could lead to a conviction, maybe.
Right, well, so, right, yeah, we should say, a rape kit is, it's a collection of physical DNA evidence collected from a person who says that he or she, usually she, has been sexually assaulted. So a nurse will take the evidence at the time of the exam, and it's an intrusive, I mean, it's not a fun process, right? These are people who have been through trauma, and they have to go through this in order to ensure that there is evidence to build the legal case against their rapist. So it's important, but it comes at some cost. And so what is especially enraging in this case is to think that women have gone through this and then the information isn't getting used.
And we'll be watching that one as that story develops, and I know you will too, Robert. And we're going to move on to talk about some tensions now. Well, between cranberry growers, I guess the elk aren't tense about it, but with conservationists, there's some concerns that maybe Wisconsin's elk herd, which is being built right now, is having some impact on the cranberry crop. What's happening?
Yes. So, yeah, elk versus cranberries, or cranberry growers versus elk. You know, elk were overhunted in Wisconsin, basically wiped out as a population in Wisconsin back in the late 1800s. And so for relatively recently, in the past 20 years or so, the State Department of Natural Resources has been reintroducing wild elk into the state. They have a deal with Kentucky to ship in a bunch of elk and every year and release some. And in July, 50 wild elk were released in the area of Black River Falls. There are hardly any there now, but biologists say that that part of the state could support as many as 400 herd as many as 400 elk. So this is great. Yeah, there's more biodiversity. There's more wild animals. These are interesting. They're these giant creatures. But the problem is they've been known to tramp through cranberry beds just before harvest time. They're destroying cranberries, or at least there's a thought that they could. So this week, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel had a report on the conflict. The DNR, for its part, is trying to head off the worries of the cranberry growers. They spent $250,000 to build a bunch of fences around the farms in that area.
Rob is with us now, Rob Menser, looking at the latest and top news from Wisconsin, and we're going to continue this conversation in just a few minutes.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're picking up our discussion now with Rob Menser from the USA Today Network about the top news from the last week. And Rob, we left off talking about concerns from some cranberry growers in Wisconsin that elk might be endangering their crop by trampling them. Apparently, elk can be about 800 pounds. Which is a big animal. The DNR built some fences. And I wonder where that debate stands right now. Is there sort of a brokered peace at the moment?
There is at the moment. And it should be said that there really hasn't been that much actual damage reported this year. It's more the sense of potential damage if the herd grows. So it could just be that cranberry growers are nervous about it. But it's the sort of issue that the DNR does need to face as they reintroduce these species.
And we're going to move on and talk about our next breaking news story from this week. On Tuesday, conservative talk radio host from southeastern Wisconsin, Charlie Sykes, announced that he would retire at the end of the year. And here's a little bit of what he had to say.
I am not saying goodbye. I am intending to continue to be an active and independent voice. But I'm just not going to be setting the alarm at 4:15 a.m. We just informed the staff that after 23 years of doing this daily radio show here at WTMJ, I'm going to be stepping back at the end of this year.
The timing is interesting on this. Sykes says there's nothing to the timing, that he was already planning this. But, I mean, Charlie Sykes has been really instrumental, I think, in shaping opinions in southeastern Wisconsin, especially this year around Donald Trump and the Republican Party. And, you know, he hasn't always been in step with other Republicans. What do you make of this news?
Yeah, so Charlie Sykes, as a conservative talk show host in Wisconsin, has had a good run of a few years here. As in the Governor Scott Walker era, I think it's been very good to Charlie Sykes and the turn towards a more conservative politics in Wisconsin. His show, I mean, he's a movement conservative guy. He's happy to, you know, sort of drum up outrage in his audience, and he brings conservative politicians on his show to talk about new, you know, to announce news or to spin. But yeah, at the same time, he has this pragmatic side to him. He's this year has been heavily a never Trump guy, really a key figure in the opposition to Donald Trump in the presidential primaries in Wisconsin, and won significantly, unlike his elected Republicans in Wisconsin, who has stuck with that position, who is he characterizes himself as a hard never Trump guy. He is not coming around. So he's happy to bash Hillary Clinton all day as well. But he's spent significant amount of time as bashing Trump, and for sure he has listeners in this presidential cycle who think he's wrong and resent that decision. But yeah, you're right. He says that's not what's driving it, and that very well may be the case. But it's interesting, and it's an interesting question whether the talk radio, sort of conservative talk radio figures who fill his you know, take his spot or try to step into that role, would have the same kind of, you know, he had the ability to be a little bit adversarial with even his own audience sometimes.
Do we have any idea what comes next for Charlie Sykes?
Well, so he writes. He edits a conservative publication in Wisconsin, and he has a book coming out that is, I guess, the working title is How the Right Lost Its Mind, that sounds like it's going to be pretty interesting and critical of some of his conservative talk radio colleagues, I would read it. That sounds interesting to me. So he speaks about wanting, you know, having an interest in writing and other types of communication. He's still going to go on MSNBC, perhaps. He's been done some TV work. And there was like a little tiny bit of speculation right after the announcement that maybe he'd run for Senate, challenge Tammy Baldwin for Senate, but he tamped that down pretty quick. I think he was pretty Sherman-esque in his denial that was his plan.
And one last story for us, Rob. Early next week, a federal judge is going to consider a request to suspend Wisconsin's voter ID law, or maybe just look at some tweaks to the law after an investigation found that there may have been some inaccurate information given out at the DMV. What is the story there?
Right. So just today, Governor Scott Walker said that a check by the State Department of Justice found some concerns. These checks happened as a direct result of a judge's order that Wisconsin performed this because the DMV offices, they're not issuing voting IDs according to the law. Part of having a voter ID law in Wisconsin is that if you are somebody in Wisconsin who needs an ID in order to vote, you should be able to get that for free. And the way the law is set up and the way that the judge has ordered, you're supposed to get it promptly while you enter into like a petition process. And so what some investigations have found, and now the Department of Justice's own investigation have found, is that those rules are not being followed, or at least not uniformly across the state. Sometimes people are being told, well, you might have to wait, or you might have to you won't get it today, you won't get it right away. And that's not what the law is. So, next week on October 12th, this judge will consider a request from the Liberal One Wisconsin Institute to actually block the law for this coming election. Now, typically judges don't get in the middle of, you know, a hot political issue this close to the election. But on the other hand, I guess it'll be interesting to see what the report that Walker administration produced found, and how the judge feels that was conducted.
And that's another one to keep an eye on. Rob, thanks a lot for joining us.
All right, thank you.
That was Rob Menser, storytelling editor with the USA Today Network Wisconsin, based in Wausau. And he joins us every Friday to talk about this week's top state news stories in Wisconsin.